Good afternoon, everyone. And with that gavel, I will convene the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is March 19th, 2015. And we are concluding today testimony regarding the Oregon Business Development Department and Senate Bill 5525. Before we jump into that, I just wanted to welcome Representative Whitsitt back.
Thank you.
We have missed you, and we're glad you're feeling better. And Mr. Bender, do you have anything to share with us?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just to help you find some of these items in OLIS, if you're looking for them online, Mr. Rogers' presentation is part of the regular OBDD presentation, so that is still to be found in OLIS under Monday's meeting date, which is March 16th. After he is done, Mr. Ball from the CFO's office will be making a presentation. That item is actually in today's meeting date. So there are two separate places to find those, but those are both online. We also have some of the testimony that's been submitted to us in advance of the meeting is also posted in today's meeting date if you'd like to find it there.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and convene the public hearing on Senate Bill 5525. And Mr. Robbins, if you'd like to come up. I know you want to wrap up your fourth day of presentations, and then we have 16 people, I believe, that are signed up under public testimony. So we'll be moving efficiently through the afternoon. I'm sorry, was there a technical problem?
Well, I left one out to sign up. I'll pick it up in a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry, we have more than 16 people to testify. All right. Well, Mr. Robbins.
Good afternoon,
nice to,
Chair
nice to
Gomber,
see you again.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean Robbins, Director of the Oregon Business Development Department. This is day four of our public testimony for the agency's budget. We'll be wrapping up today with Brian Rogers. Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust also reside within our agency. As you'll recall yesterday, we also have the Oregon Film Commission that resides in our agency. So with that, I'd yield the floor to Mr. Rogers and let him take away in his presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Johnson and Chair Gomberg and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Rogers, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. And as Sean mentioned, we are the Arts and Culture Department within Business Oregon. There are nine full-time staff members that manage the state and public investments that last year inspired 10 million unique interactions with arts and culture across the state. The Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust invest in the power of arts and culture to grow jobs, tourism, and education in the cultural sector, thus our placement within Business Oregon. Last year, the Arts Commission invested $1.3 million in operating support grants to organizations that employ 1,711 people. The combined budgets of those organizations is $220 million. Operating support for nonprofit organizations is oftentimes the most difficult support to raise. Our support continues to invest in leverage support in local areas. We foster the quality of life by funding projects like Astoria's Fisher Poets Gathering, held the first weekend in March. And this year marks the 18th year of scores of artists performed in six different locations to celebrate commercial fishing, its heritage, and community through song, poetry, and stories. We grow arts and education through programs like Poetry Out Loud, which this year saw nearly 4,000 Oregon students from a record 38 schools learning and presenting poems as part of a national recitation contest. This year we had seven first-time schools participate. This year's winner of the statewide poetry contest was named last Saturday. The winner is Gypsy Prince, and she is a senior at the Academy of Arts and Academics in Springfield, and she will attend the National Poetry Recitation Contest representing Oregon next month. And we wish her all the best and hope that she brings home the national prize to Oregon. We promote public investment in arts history, humanities. For example, our Arts Builds Community Funding Program addresses arts-based solutions to community problems that leverage an average of three times the grant award in a community. The Oregon Arts Commission's mission is to enhance the quality of life for all Oregonians through the arts by stimulating creativity, leadership, and economic vitality. We act on that mission by providing grants to artists, arts organizations, and programs, as well as by supporting the field through technical assistance, arts-focused gatherings, and other services. Like many other state arts commissions and councils across the country, we are preparing to celebrate our 50th anniversary in 2017. Just take a quick moment and give you a little national context. The Oregon Arts Commission per capita funding is 90 cents per person, which ranks us at 28th among other states. The national average is $1.13 per person. Minnesota is ranked at number one at $6.45 per person and generates more than $1 billion in economic impact for the state. Delaware and Hawaii are ranked 2 and 3 with over $4 per person. The mission of the Oregon Cultural Trust is to lead in building an environment in which cultural organizations are sustained and valued as a core part of vibrant Oregon communities. Our cultural trust is unique. No other statewide public trust exists. The trust is as unique to Oregon as the Bottle Bill and public beaches. It is recognized as a national model for innovation and citizen engagement. Through 5 statewide partners and 45 county and tribal coalitions, the trust provides funding for projects in every county each and every year. 2014 was a year of transition for the Arts Commission and Cultural Trust. It was an opportune time to pause, reassess, and rebuild relationships. Since we are also due to renew our strategic plans, I chose to begin my tenure with a strategic planning process as the framework to build our plans for the next 1 to 3 years. We conducted 14 meetings across the state to invite comments, ideas, and suggestions on how we can strengthen arts and culture throughout the state while continuing to leverage local support and resources. The meetings took place in the Dalles, Cove, Pendleton, Bend, Burns, Salem, Medford, Klamath Falls. We did 2 in Portland, East and West, Newport, Coos Bay, Astoria, and Eugene. We had more than 500 people attend, including artists, arts professionals, legislators, mayors, educators, and interested people from the community. The Arts Commission and both boards of the Commission and the Trust are also had retreats and are working with us, the staff, to build out the plans. I'd like to just point out a few examples of the key areas that emerged from the planning process and give a couple quick examples of some of the work that we're doing in those areas. Access and equity is really about making sure that the Arts Commission's programs and services are available all across in every region, and more importantly, to make sure that arts organizations are available to people in their community. Economic vitality. Last year, attendance, unique interactions at arts and cultural events in Eugene alone was over 936,000, which resulted in spending of $16.1 million, and that's excluding the cost of admission. For resident, average spending was $13, and for non-resident, it was $39, again, excluding the cost of attendance. Another direct example of economic vitality. Several years ago, the Arts Commission provided a $500 career opportunity grant to an unknown author at the time named Cheryl Strait. That grant and subsequent fellowship helped support Cheryl's writing of the novel Wild, which remained on the New York Times bestseller list for 7 consecutive weeks. Yesterday, you heard Tim Williams, the director of the film office, talk about the economic impact of the film Wild. And it's amazing to see the link from a small grant from the Oregon Arts Commission to a major motion picture being produced here. And Cheryl Strait often talks about how that award from the Oregon Arts Commission enabled her and motivated her to go away in solitude and write. Arts learning, we work both in K-12 and lifelong learning. We have a very strong network established with arts organizations to provide learning environments. Communication and awareness. We are the state organizer in partnership with some private funders for their national awareness program called Building Public Will for Arts and Culture. And it's focused on making the arts and culture more sustainable, accessible, and celebrated as part of our lives. 4 states are involved in the project, which first gathered the public's current perception of arts and culture. And one big finding was that Oregonians value and engage in artistic in cultural activities at a much higher rate than those sampled in other areas. The research also showed that Oregonians are more likely to view art and culture as an essential part of a vibrant community and as an important sector of our economy. A few focus areas for the Cultural Trust are about raising and distributing funds. And it's about increasing participation to promote culture in Oregon. Currently, there are 1,400 cultural organizations across the state that are eligible to participate with us. We also are looking very closely at strengthening our networks and increasing the capacity of 36 county and 9 tribal coalitions to better serve their regions and build stronger relationships with our 5 cultural partners: the Arts Commission, Oregon Humanities, Historical Society, Heritage Commission, and State Historic Preservation Office. We are also very much focused on increasing the awareness of culture in Oregon above the national average, due largely in part to the work of the Trust. However, we will continue to grow awareness and participation in the state tax credit program. In terms of transparency and efficiency, we have a very close eye on modernizing the Cultural Trust. Since the Trust was founded 12 years ago, a lot has changed. We are seeking flexibility in how trust funds are managed. Modernizing the Trust will enable the board to review and implement policies and practices that respond to changing environment in which we operate, helping the Trust better serve Oregonians. Senator Siner Hayward has submitted Senate Bill 441, which proposes to modernize the Trust. Senator Steiner Hayward is also in an advisory capacity to the board of the Cultural Trust. Because we monitor the impact of our programs, we know that in 2014, our funding resulted in more than 10 million unique interactions. We invested $1.3 million in arts organizations and programs, and those organizations have a combined budget of over $220 million. For many of the 111 arts groups that receive operating support, those grants are vital to their survival. The groups not only employ directly 1,711 full-time employees, but they also hire thousands of contractors and vendors that provide goods and services. Education programs supported by our grants reached over 400,000 K-12 students, including projects like Caldera, providing Oregon's most underserved students with long-term mentorships and academic support. We also worked in the Right Brain Initiative, a nationally recognized model for whole school integrated arts education. Our Poetry Out Loud program, which I mentioned earlier, is a national model. We were the first state to allow deaf students to participate in a model that is now used by arts councils and commissions across the country. Since 1979, when our Percent for Art program was launched, more than 230 public art projects have been completed. Last year alone, we managed 24 projects with a combined budget of more than $9 million. Right now, we have 16 active public art projects with 13 more ready to begin. This is an area where we have been looking for your help in this session. We have been backfilling this program with contractors for many years, which is expensive both in terms of money and maintaining important working relationships with those who manage public construction projects. Last year, I'm very happy to report, was another record year for the Cultural Trust. We raised over $4.3 million through 8,800 donations. And last year, we distributed $1.8 million in grants and services across the state. $2.7 million of that $4.3 was placed into our permanent fund, which is now at over $25 million. That is ensuring that future generations of Oregonians can participate in culture as we have in the past and as we do now. Individual participation in the Trust tax credit program encourages individuals and couples to participate, thereby leveraging local philanthropy. The average donation to the Trust is $490, which means individuals are also donating at least that amount to one or more of the 1,400 cultural organizations across the state. The Trust funded over $1.2 million to the statewide partners in county and tribal coalitions. that then provided support to over 450 projects reaching every county of the state. I'll give you a quick example of a project called Washed Ashore, a nonprofit in Bandon, Oregon, which started with a $500 grant from the one of the Trust County coalitions. Now the nationally recognized project, which creates art from ocean debris, is a national model for community arts and ecology projects, having its work also featured in national aquatic parks. The Trust also receives revenue from license plate renewal and issuing, which is used to raise awareness and support for the role of the Trust. I'd like to briefly just describe a couple of very special projects from last year.
And Mr. Rogers, if I could ask, if you could just pick the one best rather than giving us a couple, because we've got a lot of people lined up behind you.
Yes, Chair Gumberg. I'm sorry about that.
Thank you.
Last session, the legislature provided bond funding through the Oregon Cultural Trust for the Confluence Celilo Park Restoration Project, including artist Maya Lin's curved elevated walkway modeled after tribal fishing platforms submerged by the Dalles Dam in 1957. Maya Lin is an internationally renowned artist who designed the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. The project at Celilo Park has spurred investments of more than $10 million in design, infrastructure, and support from private, local, state, and federal sources, including a $3 million grant from the United States Department of Transportation. This project is part of our World of Work grant, which connects students who were trained as sound technicians for Oregon Shakespeare Festival, The Green Show, which is an outdoor performance. The World of Work projects were designed to expose underserved students to careers in the arts and creative industries. Through a collaborative between the Trust and the Commission, we're able to fund two grant cycles of projects which are currently active. For the biennium, the combined arts and culture budget is $14.4 million. The other funds, they include trust donations, license plate revenue, percent for art administrative fee, which is 10% of the 1% of the total construction cost, and funding from the Ford Family Foundation, which supports several key visual arts initiatives. The general fund is used exclusively for the Arts Commission, including administration funding of grant programs and services. Federal funding is from the National Endowment for the Arts. And our budget also includes a policy option package for two public art positions. We have been backfilling this program with contractors for the past several years, which has taken its toll on relationship vital to managing this important project. We have funds to pay for the positions, but require legislative approval to add them. I thank you very much for your time today. And at this point, I'd like to turn the program back over to Director Robbins, unless there are questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
I have one.
Please.
I was wondering if you could provide us county by county. You said you had 45 separate groups that on the Arts and Cultural Trust. I assume that was all the counties plus the federally recognized tribes. If you could provide us with a list of what went to each county out of that, that would be great.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Representative.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rogers. And I apologize for cutting you a little bit short.
It's okay.
But we're on a tight agenda. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Chair Gomberg and members of the committee. I'm going to wrap a bow on this so we can move the agenda forward. After four long days of testimony, I appreciate your attention. We've covered a lot of ground in that time, everything from global trade to innovation entrepreneurship to business development to film to arts to infrastructure. We've covered a lot of ground, and I appreciate your patience and diligence. I also hope that our presentation has demonstrated a disciplined and innovative management approach to this agency and our work to try and catalyze job growth for Oregonians. But I also think this next segment of public testimony, what's important to note is that we as an agency don't do any of this work alone. We rely on a network of partners all across the state, they on us and us on them, frankly, and I'm grateful for their willingness to be here today to speak up on behalf not only of their own priorities, but quite frankly, the priorities of economic development as a whole through our agency. with that, Chair Gomberg, I greatly appreciate the last 4 days, and I'll close it on that note unless you have any closing questions.
We have questions. We'll catch you at the very end. Appreciate your 4 days of disciplined and detailed presentation. Mr. Ball.
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, Dustin Ball with the Chief Financial Office. I'm going to scoot over to the end here so I can run this slide, but I'll get started real quick here. Again, for the record, Dustin Ball with the Chief Financial Office. My presentation today is intended to be a brief overview of the governor's budget and the various components we evaluate in considering the budget for the Oregon Business Development Department. Over the past 4 days, you've heard a lot of testimony from the agency. They've done a great job diving into their various programs and the investments that are proposed for each. So in the interest of time, I'll keep my presentation fairly short and move through my slides quickly, but feel free to stop me as I go along if you have any questions. So when we were developing the governor's budget for the agency, the emerging issues that we considered were revitalizing rural economies in Oregon, providing the infrastructure needs for Oregon communities, and attracting, growing, and supporting businesses in Oregon. And this is in line with the agency's Grow Your Own strategy. Also, we looked at how the agency aligns with the 10-year plan for Oregon, particularly the economy and jobs outcome area. This slide here is going to give you a brief overview of the agency's expenditure history. On the far left is the actual budget for the 11-13 biennium. The middle column is going to give you the current biennium's legislatively adopted budget, or excuse me, approved budget. And the far right is the proposed budget for 15-17. And you'll see there's significant growth, and we'll go through some of the components of that in the next few slides. What I want to highlight here is you look at the overall agency budget, and it's significant at approximately $650 million. When you look at the operating budget for the agency, what it takes to operate the budget, it's the $47 million, which is the operations. The remainder of that, a big chunk, approximately $500 million, is really distribution loans, grants that are pushed out from the agency, and this includes the revolving loan funds. Also, another significant component is the debt service that we talked about briefly on day one at $100 million. One of the priority areas in the governor's budget is research and innovative technology investments. This includes the Oregon Innovation Council funding for industrial competitiveness, funding for innovation initiatives, and establishing a natural resources transformative technology grant program. And this is separate legislation in House Bill 2434. Another priority area was infrastructure investments. This includes recapitalization of the Special Public Works Funds, the recapitalization of the Brownfields Fund, and establishing an Oregon Infrastructure Opportunity Program. Again, separate legislation in House Bill 2435. Other key initiatives included in the governor's budget are seismic rehabilitation grant program funding, regional solutions funding, and you'll notice this is partial lottery fund and partial lottery bonds. We also provide additional staff resources to enhance community development and provide additional resources for global trade and data analytics. And that concludes my presentation, but if there are any questions, I'd be happy to address those.
Any questions? All right, thank you so very much. We're going to start the public testimony portion of the afternoon. I'm going to ask Mr. Riggs, Mr. Landauer, and Ms. Clark to come on up. While you're coming up, folks, let me tell you where we are at. The committee prior to ours ran overtime, which made it impossible for our staff here to set up the room, so we got started late. We have a exciting turnout of people that would like to testify today. 18 people signed up. Looking over the list, I see they have come from far away, very far away, and very, very far away. And if everybody takes 5 minutes, we will only run a half hour overtime. Now, I'm going to stay here till we're done. I know some of my colleagues have day's end commitments. Some of them will stay if they can. If you've submitted written testimony, I'd encourage you to kind of summarize that because we do have it in the record. But we're going to work our way through this and make sure we get a chance to hear what everybody has come here to share with us. So that being said, Mr. Riggs, welcome.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization. We are the eight cities in Deschutes, Crook, and Jefferson County, and we've been working on economic development since I came into the building in 1999. I want to testify on one element of the Business Oregon budget, although we support many elements, and that's to drill down on the regional solutions team. This group of individuals has been invaluable in working with our region over the last 5 or 10 years to try to come up with collaborative solutions to problems that we've had in attracting economic development. I could give you example after example. Some of it's included in my written testimony, so I won't go into a great deal of detail. But I do want to say that it's not just the fact that we have a team of people from different agencies put together in a room. It's also the fact that they come with a mission. You know, their intent in Central Oregon is to figure out what the roadblocks are, where the red tape is, overcome that, and help our communities bring economic development and jobs to Central Oregon. I grew up in Central Oregon at a time where we had timber developments and we had mills, five mills operating in Redmond when I was a kid. There's one mill operating in Redmond right now. And so having a regional solutions team to work with the state to help bring in jobs is critical. So I won't go into any more detail. I just want to say we're 100% in support of that portion of the budget. Many other elements, including the Special Public Works Fund, the funding for airports and grants and loans, recapitalization of some of these elements that are important. But we very much appreciate your attention today, and I'll yield back the balance of my time.
All right, thank you. And we do have your written testimony. Mr. Landauer.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Gomberg and Johnson. Mark Landauer here on behalf of several groups, the Special Districts Association, the Oregon Public Ports Association, as well as the Multnomah County Drainage District. I submitted a letter on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association. I would like to mention, however, that my letter failed to support the funding for the Special Public Works Fund. And now I will put on my Multnomah County Drainage District hat and simply say within that fund there's $7 million that would be dedicated for levee investigations and rehabilitation. This is an emerging issue that is really impacting many areas of the state, and we'd just like to extend our support for that particular line item as well. And with that, I'll conclude.
Thank you so very much. Ms. Clark.
My name is Jean Clark, and I'm the president of Pioneer Asphalt, Pioneer Construction, and Pendleton Ready Mix. My businesses are in Eastern Oregon. They include manufacturing hot mix asphalt, ready mix concrete, and aggregates. Our businesses focus on site development, heavy highway construction, paving, roads and parking lots, and underground utility work. Our customers include government agencies, cities, federal government, as well as businesses like the Union Pacific Railroad, large commercial businesses, and even some residential customers. Since 2007, I have been able to maintain an average of 30 to 32 full-time equivalent employees each year. I have been associated with the Small Business Development Centers since 1989 and have actively utilized the counseling and training services that the SBDCs provide to businesses over the years. As a business owner, I've encountered many challenges while working in the construction industry. In 1987, when I purchased the ready-mix and concrete and aggregate business, it doubled my employees' size, and my business structure and processes were not able or sufficient to allow for continued growth. I needed help, so I contacted the SBDC, which was one of the best business decisions that I made. The SBDC provided instruction, on-site advising services, and networking with other businesses in the region. The ability to successfully expand my businesses over the years can be directly linked to the availability of the services and staff at Blue Mountain Community College's SBDC. When I expressed some specific training needs for my businesses. The SBDC worked with me to help the college develop those classes and the opportunities to educate my existing workforce, as well as to create a structure for advancing continual workforce skills. And in a regional area like mine, that is really significant. In 2011, I became aware of the Grow Oregon program, the level of interaction and guidance provided by the Grow Oregon team was out of my business's financial reach without that program. Developing a new strategic plan, coordinating with consultants, listening to presentations by experts, they provided me the ability to set up, go from a local business model to a regional business model and have growth. Increasing business growth and the expansion of skilled employees in the workforce is a valuable outcome of this program. So why do I believe that Oregon's SBDCs and Grow Oregon programs should be funded? I really believe these programs are an investment in Oregon's business future. My observation is that the vitality of economic activity in a region is a reinvestment and it's expanded in that area. In rural Oregon, programs are not as available to those of us as they are in the I-5, those who work and live in the I-5 corridor. I believe the SBDC and the Oregon Grow Oregon programs are vital to our continual growth in rural Oregon. My businesses provide family wage jobs with health benefits and retirement for our employees. Small businesses are the backbone of the Oregon industry and economy. All of Oregon's communities benefit when the state funds are invested in our SBDCs and Grow Oregon programs. Thank you.
Thank you so very much, Ms. Clark. Thanks for coming over from Pendleton. Continued success to you over there. I'm a small business person myself. I get it.
I also included, today it came in late, but the Grow Oregon fact sheet for your packets.
Right. Very good. Any questions for this panel?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
I can't let Ms. Clark go without acknowledging the role that she plays in one of the big economic development activities in Pendleton, and I wish Senator Hansel was here so he could hear me pander to Pendleton.
But thank you.
Ms. Clark is a big deal in the Pendleton Roundup, and that event serves your community so brilliantly. It serves all of Oregon. Thank you for that service.
Thank you, Co-Chair.
Indeed. All right. Thank you so much. And I'll call Mr. McCrate, Mr. Coonan, and Commissioner Hunt. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Please.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chairs Johnson and Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Jim McCrite, and I serve as Director of Strategic Partnerships for the Oregon Technology Business Center, which is a 10-year-old incubator based out of Beaverton, started by the city of Beaverton as an independent 501c3 organization. Over the last 10 years, we've developed a number of programs and have intellectual property that we decided we wanted to share with the rest of the state. And last year, I approached the Oregon Community Foundation when I learned they were allocating a very small percentage of their total assets towards strategic economic development programs. And they agreed to fund a pilot project last fall where we went into the Pendleton-LaGrande area and Astoria Seaside for a four-month project and worked with four entrepreneurs in each area doing a live video conferencing every 2 weeks and then mentoring in the off weeks by phone and in some cases in person to help small business people gain access to the many resources that are frankly in the greater Portland area, which oftentimes is very difficult for small business people outside the Portland area to reach. They don't know necessarily who to call or even sometimes what questions to ask. So we were very pleased to work with them on that. That was a pilot project, and we went back to OCF, and they agreed based on the value of the program, and you have the letters from the state SBDC director and the director out of Pendleton who participated in the program, that they agreed to want to continue this program. So OCF agreed to fund another session of this program, so we're starting in 2 weeks in the Pendleton-LaGrande area, Astoria, Tillamook area, Coos Bay, and Klamath Falls. And the SBDC directors that we're working with are lining up to four companies in each area, and we'll continue this live video conferencing over the next 4 months to help those entrepreneurs in those areas. We just feel strongly that there's been a lot of talk about rural economic development, and we feel this is one project that is actually doing something on the ground, working with small business people to help them grow their business. I can't keep going back to the OCF fund every 6 months for funding, so we're hopeful that we can work with Business Oregon, the SBDC program, foundations, corporations, whatever, to continue the funding for this type of program and reach, you know, rural entrepreneurs throughout Oregon. We were very pleased under the leadership of Sean Robbins to see that he's appointed an assistant director for entrepreneurship and innovation. We'll be hopefully talking with them and working with them to see if this program might fit into their plans for the next biennium. And the SBDC office, state office, and the local offices have been very supportive, and we're excited about expanding beyond the four SBDC locations, because as you know, there are 19 around the state, and a good number of the other ones might be interested in this program as well. But we have often told people in rural Oregon that if you can't find a job, you might want to create a job. And there are a lot of people out there who would like to start their own business, be their own boss, and we're here to help them build a business and grow a business in rural Oregon. We think this is really a critical program for the state of Oregon. So I thank you for your attention and any help the committee can give us in directing us to a way to continue this program in the next biennium would be very gratefully appreciated. Thank you
so much, Mr. McRae. Mr. Coonan.
Co-chairs Johnson and Gomberg, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Jim Coonan. I'm the executive director for RAIN, the Regional Accelerator and Innovation Network. You may be aware that RAIN was created through an initiative of Regional Solutions, and its objective is to create an entrepreneurial ecosystem to advance the formation and growth of traded sector startups in the South Willamette Valley and the Mid-Coast region. RAIN collaborators include Oregon State University, University of Oregon, City of Corvallis, City of Eugene, City of Springfield, Corvallis Benton Economic Development, Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce, and Lane County. And responding to a question I heard earlier, a previous day, all of those are cash contributors to the RAIN effort. Our strategies, initial strategies, include the launching of two startup business accelerators, one in Corvallis and one in Eugene. Second, to connect entrepreneurs to resources that they need to grow. And third, create new sources of regional investment capital for startup companies. Our progress in less than 2 years, even though this was agreed or provided by funds by the state in the last or current biennium, we didn't actually incorporate to last May. So it's more like a year and a half. But in that time, we have launched a Corvallis accelerator, and then this last July, a Eugene accelerator. We also were tasked with finding a match for the original $3.75 million that we got from the state. I'm very pleased to announce we have achieved a match so far of $4.24 million, exceeding the one-to-one match that we want, including the gift of the Bradford Building in downtown Eugene by the City of Eugene that will provide the entrepreneurial hub for activities in Lane County. 20 companies so far have graduated from the accelerators, and interestingly, I might note, half of them are from the universities, but the other half are from the communities. We're really trying to create community assets to grow these kinds of companies. Haven't been around very long, but we've already generated 18 jobs. We've also created $750,000 in new regional investment capital to invest in these companies. We've involved more than 700 students. We've included 87 folks as mentors and advisors to these companies. And these companies that graduated have already attracted $1 million in follow-on capital. Regional Solutions has identified rain as the top priority for the South Willamette Valley and the Mid-Coast area. With the collaboration from state, regional, and local partners, RAIN will continue to build on the results achieved in creating opportunities for startup and employment in the South Willamette Valley and the Mid-Coast area. I think it also could prove to be a very interesting template of how to support entrepreneurial activity in more rural parts of our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Hunt, welcome.
Thank you, Chairs Johnson and Gomberg, and committee members. For the record, I'm Doug Hunt. I'm a Lincoln County Commissioner. I'm also a member of the South Valley and Mid-Coast Regional Solutions Advisory Committee. And since we're here to talk about business development and economic development, I think it's pertinent to note that prior to becoming a county commissioner about 3 years ago, I had a 39-year career in banking. So have pretty extensive knowledge and activities involved in what we're discussing today. As has been noted, the regional solutions teams play a vital role in helping our coastal communities with key infrastructure development and coordinating multi-agencies. I see regional solutions as the entity that brings multiple agencies together to address and try to resolve multiple issues rather than a single issue being resolved with multiple aspects of the regional solutions team. Some of the success stories relative to Lincoln County, let me talk about the Port of Toledo expansion. There was a boat haul-out project that was funded through Connect Oregon. Regional Solutions helped with permitting and some of the other environmental issues to help move that project forward. In Lincoln City, East Devil's Lake Road, many of you may have seen a picture of the fish swimming across the surface of the road, not under the road, but swimming across. The road represents a block to the flow of water into the lake, and Regional Solutions has been involved in getting together state lands, DEQ, ODFW, and ODOT to try to come to a solution there. We're working moving forward and working with them. Expect that project to cost about $5 million. Another project while we're in Lincoln City, East Devil's Lake Wastewater. There's about 700 homes along the lake that are not on sewer. Represents an adverse impact on the Devil's Lake. So we're working with Regional Solutions to try to identify a solution there. DEQ is involved, the Infrastructure Finance Authority, state lands, as well as the city are involved there. Some discussions further south in the county, Regional Solutions is working with the Port of Alsea, talking about the possibility of revitalizing the oyster industry there. The port is experiencing some financial challenges, and this activity would represent the possibility of some new revenues in the south part of the county. I'll mention marine research and study industry. That's a growing activity in the Newport area and Lincoln County area. I think when you look at regional solutions and the opportunity for that group to help facilitate the growth of that industry, it represents fantastic potential for our county. Finally, going back to the fact that I was a banker, one of the most common experiences I had was somebody coming in with an idea, thought that, gee, you know, I want to go do this or I want to open this business. And most of those people had little or no idea about what it took to actually take that embryonic business thought, develop it to a viable business plan, then to go out and get financing. And you've heard from two other individuals here, one on each side of me, about the value of having a network available where you can get advice as you nurture those businesses and then seek financing for those businesses. So lastly, I'll just again emphasize my support for RAIN. RAIN has offices, as you've heard, in Eugene and Corvallis. And I'll be honest, as a commissioner in Lincoln County, I was a bit skeptical at first. I'm going, okay, I understand the need. As a banker, it's clear there's value there. But how does Lincoln County access that? And then as I thought about it and became a little less parochial in my thoughts, I realized that with mobility, with technology, and the fact that, going to a class once in a while, and maybe you have to drive 45 minutes to Corvallis. When the Highway 20 project's done, I hope it's less than that. But the need to drive to Corvallis to attend a class to help nurture a business, I don't think is too much to ask. So a strong supporter of RAIN after some initial skepticism. I would say that as a coastal resident, I like the acronym RAIN, but an acronym like SUNNY would probably be good. So in conclusion, strong support of regional solutions and encourage your support of regional solutions and a regional infrastructure fund.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Yes, Senator Johnson.
You mentioned the road project that you're working on will have a price tag approaching $5 million. What will be your other sources of funding as you try to build around the regional solutions model of creating a mosaic of funding to address these problems that are too big for one entity to handle?
I know the county is willing to put some money up. I believe the city of Lincoln City would put some money up. And to be honest, I don't know beyond that, but I know there is a recognition that there will need to be a mosaic of funding for that project.
Yeah. Senator, as somebody who drives that road regularly, I think if you just put buckets at either end of the flooding and just people will drop contributions, that will add to the mosaic.
Yeah.
Private sector engagement.
Maybe we can catch the fish and market the fish.
Representative Reed, did you?
I did have just a quick comment. Coach Johnson inspired me by her self-described pandering to Pendleton. There's someone here from Beaverton who is doing great work, too. So I want to just say thanks to Mr. McCrae for coming and telling your story, and I hope we'll be able to help.
Thank you. And, Commissioner, we're starting on Monday morning with ODOT. They're going to make a big difference on Highway 20 between Newport and Corvallis, cutting 20 minutes off that commute and eliminating the most dangerous stretch of highway in the state. We're looking forward to a ribbon cutting about this time next year.
I am also looking forward to that, too.
Very good. Gentlemen, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to call Commissioner Labhart, Ms. Hansen, and I'm going to skip over to Mr. Neal, who's come a long way. And commissioners, you're taking your seat. I just wanted to acknowledge that Tillamook County has suffered a significant loss this week. That was noted in our committee earlier. Mayor Shirley was a force to be reckoned with. She'll certainly be missed. And I know several members of our committee will be joining you on Sunday for her memorial in Tillamook.
Also noted on the floor, Mr. Chair.
Also noted on the floor, yes.
Thank you, Co-Chair. For the record, Mark Labhart, I have the privilege of being a Tillamook County Commissioner for the last 11 years. I serve on the Association of Oregon Counties Legislative Committee and the Board of Directors of the Association of Oregon Counties. I want to talk about three things related to regional solutions. One, a project that's done. I want to tell you a story about that. I'm going to do this all in less than 5 minutes. So I want to tell you about a project that's in the works, and then I want to tell you about a project that's in the planning stages. But before I do, I want to recognize the best state senator in Oregon and the best representative in Oregon. That's co-chairs Gomberg and Johnson, who happen to be our representative of Tillamook County. So
speaking of pandering.
Just so.
That's a good
question.
It's good for me to
So let's talk about a project that's done. Do you like to drink beer? I do. The Pelican Pub and Brewery is looking to expand its operations in Tillamook County, and regional solutions played a key role in helping to create jobs in Tillamook County. And in rural Oregon, and in particularly in my county, regional solutions was a key partner and a key player, and Business Oregon was a key partner and a key player in helping that pub to expand to a new operation in Tillamook that created jobs, dozens of jobs. It is a stalwart anchor tenant in the downtown Tillamook area, which is going to have a $28 million renovation project coming this next year, thanks to Senator Johnson's work on transportation a few years ago, and that will be a key player in doing that. If it wasn't for Business Oregon and the various players, ODOT, DEQ, DLCD, Business Oregon to help with the financing and putting together that project, we wouldn't have that pub expansion in the Tillamook area. And now they are looking, they've just recently bought some new property and are going to expand it even further. So that's a project that's done. I doubt if it would have been there without the help of Regional Solutions and the Business Oregon. A project that's about ready to happen is I want to be known as Tillamook is the land of trees, cheese, and ocean breeze. I don't want to be known as, oh, you're the ones that flood every year. And every time we have a flood, the TV stations run down and report from Tillamook. I'm here in Tillamook reporting from the flood that is now hitting the North Tillamook area and shutting down business and putting people out of jobs for a period of time. So we are working on a regional solutions project that is huge, $10 million. And we have raised almost the entire $10 million that is going to address a significant flooding issue in the North Tillamook area. It will be one of the largest wetland restoration projects on the Oregon coast, if not in Oregon's history. It will be one of the largest flood reduction projects in Oregon's history. $10 million project. It wouldn't have happened without Regional Solutions and the effort that Regional Solutions put into this effort. We have ODOT involved. We have DEQ involved. We have Department of Fish and Wildlife involved and other state agencies. They work in a collaborative manner to try to address flooding. So that's a project that's going to contract in 2016. You will see dirt being moved. You will see a significant flood reduction project in that North Tillamook area that will keep our main business core moving and keep new jobs and new infrastructure in that North Tillamook area from the cheese factory down to the city of Tillamook. One that's in the planning stages that is a huge regional solution project is the Salmonberry Rails and Trails project that's going from the city of Banks over the mountain, over the Coast Range, to the port of Tillamook Bay along the port's destroyed rail line in some areas and existing rail line in others. This is a safety project, not just a rail and trails project. We kill people on 101 riding bicycles. We need to get them off of 101 and we need to address some of the safety issues. By building this trail along the port's right-of-way, the railroad right-of-way, we will get that bike traffic off of 101. We will also create a historic trail that will go over the Salmonberry Canyon, a beautiful scenic area, and go over to the Banks. And you can travel from Portland to Tillamook on a bicycle or walk. And it's a big project. It's going to take a regional solutions effort. It's going to take working with the environmental community, working with the property owners, working with state agencies to make this thing happen. Regional solutions is a collaborative process, and it's a good story to tell. So I've told you a story about a project that's done. I've told you about a project that's in the works and a project that's planned. That's what Regional Solutions is all about. We need your support for the funding of Regional Solutions, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that you have. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry I rapid-fired through that.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. Senator.
Commissioner, as you just laid out, you know Regional Solutions well. You've been a convener. You've been a project team member. Do we need to change the structure of Regional Solutions, or how, in your opinion, how's it working right now?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, I think Regional Solutions is working well as it is right now. It's functioning well. I see no reason to change it. I see it's a collaborative process that is working very well. And the Regional Solutions office is there in Tillamook, and I counsel with them at least once a week, so I think the process is working very well as it is.
A follow-up. Would you speak to a, I believe, mistaken perception in this building about Regional Solutions abrogating the need to get state and local state and federal permits for projects like the big project you're talking about with the flooding reduction? Has federal permits that have to be secured, state permits, local? But do you have any comments about Regional Solutions? I mean, I think there's a misunderstanding in this building that somehow Regional Solutions is a way to sidestep environmental protections or to get around permitting.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, no, that's the process is still the same. There's no sidestepping going on. It's bringing all the players to the table, working through the issues in a collaborative manner. There's definitely no sidestepping of any permitting, any kind of special deals being cut. The game is played fair and square, and it works really well when you can bring everybody in the room and talk about it. The key, I think, is when you get the federal agencies, the state agencies, local government, i.e. the county, and in the case case of Tillamook, the city of Tillamook, and the state agencies all sitting down and saying, okay, what permits do we need? How do we work through this permitting process? You're going to need one from DEQ. You're going to need one from this federal agency, U.S. Fish and Wildlife. You're going to need a county permit. You're going to need a city permit. You're going to need an ODOT access permit. So you just start talking and you start saying, okay, can you work on this area? Can you work on this area? And it's, again, a collaborative process that works very well. And we're not asking anybody to circumvent any kind of process or any kind of cutting special deals. It's all up front and played fair and square.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you for mentioning Salmonberry, which Senator Johnson wrote and which I carried on the House floor. I thank you for your tireless advocacy for Tillamook County. The only thing I would mention about the creamery is the creamery's in Senator Johnson's district, but all the cows are in my district. Ms. Hansen.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chairs Johnson and Gomberg and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rita Hansen, and I'm the CEO of a startup company called Onboard Dynamics. We're actually the first company spun out from technology that originated at Oregon State University Cascades. Our objective, just real short, it's we commercialize, or we're in the process of commercializing natural gas compression technology capability onboard your vehicle so that you can actually self-fuel from any low-pressure natural gas supply. We were obviously very thrilled that Governor Brown signed the Clean Fuels Bill last week. So, but we were selected last year by the Department of Energy for a $3.6 million award to actually continue the engineering work required to go from proof of concept, which was done at Oregon State, and taking it to a commercially viable product in under 2 years. This federal funding award, though, required a 20% cost share match because we're a for-profit entity. The Oregon Innovation Council, which is why I'm here, the initiatives Oregon Best and Onami together provided $400,000 of gap funding to enable us to secure that award. Without that, Onboard Dynamics would not have been able to execute on that contract. The company would not have launched, and $3.6 million would not have come into the state of Oregon. In addition to that funding, Oregon Best and Onami have been providing valuable showcase opportunities. They've provided introductions to collaborators and investors, and they've continued their mentoring and support of our company. I tell people that even though I am a 50-something entrepreneur with great personal and professional contacts, and I have a lot of experience, it really does take a lot of external help from the entire community to build a company from scratch. So your continued support and funding of the Oregon Innovation Council initiatives, including Oregon Best and Onami, is really critical to the entrepreneurial infrastructure of the state. I know that over the years, I think it's 8 years with Oregon Best and 12 years with Onami, and I know that Cindy and David back there can correct me, but without their programs, they have funded many other organizations like Onboard Dynamics in order to start those companies, develop those companies, and grow those companies, even in rural areas like Bend and other parts of the state that are not Portland, Eugene, or Corvallis. I also want to say that innovation and entrepreneurship in general is just a priority in Central Oregon. I've been out there for 3 years now, and it's a really, really fun place to be, especially if you're an entrepreneur. Your support of the Regional Infrastructure Fund will allow the creation of an innovation center that's being talked about to help spin out more technologies and businesses from Oregon State University Cascades. And with that, I also want to emphasize the importance of a four-year university in Bend. It's going to be a game changer for our community, and it does need to happen. The sooner the better. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so very much. Mr. Neal.
Co-chairs Johnson and Gomberg and members of the committee, my name is Gary Neal. I'm the manager of the Port of Marl. I submitted to you my written testimony, but I also sent out added a letter that I thought was interesting that I'll touch on as well. But my comments are brief as it relates to the Business Oregon budget. You know, we're critical partners and linkages to infrastructure needs throughout the state. The Port of Marl has been very successful in attracting a lot of jobs
and it's directly linked to the support and assistance we've gotten from Business Oregon and the legislature and other programs to help us build that infrastructure. A couple of specific items that that are important to note. Special Public Works Fund program and its additional proposal to include $7 million for patient capital is an important additional tool. I think that would be very beneficial to rural communities and all communities. The Oregon Infrastructure Opportunity Program, the $10 million for that last mile infrastructure is a really good tool. It reminds me of the IOF program, the Immediate Opportunity Fund program, but for other purposes, and I think that's we've used the IOF program, and it's been very successful, and this would be a great benefit as well. And then the other item in my comments, it relates to the Regional Infrastructure Fund, and I think that's a great tool. But I also wanted to point out this letter that was passed on to me, and I thought it was really to the point here. This is a letter from the governor of Florida, apparently sent to shippers on the West Coast, and it talks about their investments that they've made in Florida and how they're going out and going to aggressively apparently pursue businesses in California, but that's in our backyard, and they'll probably come up here unless we can maybe put some roadblocks in the freeway system or something. But I think, you know, it just shows you the competition that we have and the importance of investment in infrastructure where we can do that. And I would encourage you to do what you can to support investment in infrastructure, because it does pay off. And I think the Port of Morrow is a good example of that. But thank you very much.
Excellent question. Senator Johnson?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I believe that we'll put Governor Scott's letter into the Oregon Legislative Information System, but I just would like to read from one paragraph of it. According to media reports, a 9-month-long labor dispute that ended in late February involving ports along the west coast of the United States has caused major delays and uncertainties in unloading ships and delivering goods, which could affect normal operations for up to 6 months. These delays have presented challenges to many shippers whose businesses rely on the ability to efficiently move goods across the nation, and many have indicated they plan to divert cargo from the west coast. Florida ports are undoubtedly a solution to this problem. We have discussed the departure of Hanjin with both Director Robbins, and some of us have had the opportunity to be briefed by Bill Wyatt. Yeah. I'm not sure that as a state we have really perceived or understood the catastrophic effects of the departure of Hanjin. And I am so glad that you brought this letter. It certainly drives home the point that our loss on the West Coast could easily be Florida's gain. The 650 jobs that Oregonians will lose because of the inability to resolve this labor dispute. Thank you, Mr. Neal, for bringing this.
Thank you so much for putting that in the record, right, Senator. I couldn't agree more. Any questions for this panel? Mr. Neal, thanks for coming so far. Ms. Hansen, continued success to you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, drive careful on the way home. I know those roads. And I'll ask Mr. Hendrickson, Mr. Snyder, and Mr. Shoemaker to come on up. Please.
Okay. Co-Chair Gomber, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Don Hendrickson, and I lead the finance and business operations organizations for Boeing's Portland facility. I've worked at the Oregon facility for over 25 years, and we have over 1,700 employees there, and it's the largest complex hard metals machining facility in the Boeing company and probably in the world. I also play a role in acting as executive focal for Boeing Company to Portland State University and serve on the industry advisory board for the School of Engineering for Oregon State. So I do a lot of work with the universities. Oregon Metals Initiative was established in 1990 to provide enhanced metals research. It's been going on ever since, and it relies on a dollar-for-dollar match from industry. Since it started, it has funded over 500 projects. In the first year of this biennium, $681,000 was matched dollar-for-dollar for industry. And the current biennium, all the dollars, the $610,000 or $11,000, all but $50,000 approximately have been matched. And In my company's case, we've done projects for many years, and it's really a great place where industry comes together and they work side by side with the engineering schools, OSU, PSU, Oregon Tech, and sometimes other universities. We recently completed a project that went on for several years related to how do we get better models of understanding to make manufacturing more sustainable. We've initiated a new project this year related to enhancing our lean manufacturing activities, our lean manufacturing system. We've been a strong supporter and help, support Oregon Metals Initiative. Last year, the Northwest Collaboratory for Sustainable Manufacturing was initiated, and I probably attended 20 meetings of several hours over the year. And it's pretty unusual to have the three leaders of engineering departments at Oregon State, Portland State, and Oregon Tech come together with seven or eight metals companies and agree on a future. How do we expand beyond OMI into applied R&D to help commercialize and be able to take new technologies and put them to use in Oregon businesses? We formally incorporated the collaboratory in December. It has a strong executive director in Mike Hallgrenson, who was my colleague at the Boeing Company for many years and retired. Has a long history of working with our local universities. And the collaboratory is off and running. We held a value summit last June that highlighted more than 300 ideas, and we have projects in the working with Oregon State. And the key is joint projects. So when we can get projects where Boeing and Blount Benchmade Knives can agree, we have common areas where we can increase our manufacturing efficiency and be able to use those in our own ways. I think we're stronger as we build the relationships. The funding you provided in the last biennium helped add five faculty positions that industry had a say in who's hired. So Oregon State filled three positions. Portland State has filled one position. I've hosted several of the key faculty members at our facility in Portland, and I can tell you that without industry input, those people wouldn't have been selected for these roles. So that's a key thing. We've also been able to fund equipment. We've been underinvesting in equipment in metals manufacturing at our engineering schools. And so we funded $500,000 worth of equipment that had full matching dollars that's either there or in the works of being there. So I believe in the value of collaboration. I appreciate your support through Business Oregon, through OES that we've had for Oregon Metals Initiative and for the collaboratory. And we're looking forward to it growing. Our next summit is going to be in May of this year. And because of the progress we've made, one of the founding leaders of an equivalent collaboratory in the UK, the AMRC, the Advanced Manufacturing Research Center, is going to come be the keynote speaker and is recognizing that Oregon is where we do metals manufacturing. So I thank you for the support.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Hendrickson. Mr. Snyder.
I'm here to comment with regard to the
If you could just introduce yourself for the record real quick, I'm sorry.
I'm getting to that.
Oh, excuse me. Yes.
The Infrastructure Financing Authority. My name is John Snyder. I was the finance director for the City of Astoria from 1985 to 2011. Since then, my job with the city is as the financial analyst. I am primarily responsible for preparing the city's budget and financial statements. Through the years, I have worked with the various financing programs offered by the state, particularly through the Infrastructure Financing Authority. Over the years, this group has supported Astoria projects like the slow sand filter, the Skyline water tank, reservoir covers that were federally mandated, the Bear Creek water line, and the wastewater treatment plant upgrades. IFA has also supported the city's federally mandated combined sewer overflow projects with loans and grants. Astoria Public Works and finance staff has always found IFA staff to be supportive, helpful, responsive, and flexible in their effort to find ways to provide financing for these projects. The citizens of Astoria and city staff are grateful for IFA's and the state's support for these critical public works projects. Thank you for your support of the IFA mission.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. And this committee would like to congratulate the City of Astoria on the 30th anniversary of Goonies.
Oh, yes, indeed.
I'm sure there's going to be a big gathering there. I can only imagine how many people you'll have for the 30th anniversary of Kindergarten Cop or Short Circuit. Mr. Shoemaker.
All right. Thank you, Senator Johnson and Gomberg, co-chairs, and the rest of the committee. My name is Bud Shoemaker, and I'm the port manager of the Port of Toledo. And I may be a little clumsy in this. I've only done this one other time, and I'm 66 years old. So
you're fine.
The Port of Toledo is about 10 miles up the river from Newport, so we're connected by the Aquinna River. And we traditionally are in Toledo's an industrial port, and we have leases and provide leases and infrastructure for the boating community. Commercial fishing is real important to Lincoln County. It supplies about 10% of the personal income into the county. And in 2010, or 2008, the boatyard, the only large boatyard capable of hauling our larger boats, was closed. And sat closed for about 2 years. And you have to recognize what we have on the Central Oregon coast. We've got second only to Seattle, the largest distant water fleet that fishes from the Bering Sea to the South Pacific, is home ported. And in Toledo, we provide a lot of the infrastructure for the repair and maintenance of those vessels. We have Aquinna boat, which has been a lessee of the port for 30 years, 35 years, never late on a payment. And Winter Hawk Seafoods, and we also have Fish People Seafood, who is a rapidly expanding business. It's, but anyway, when the yard closed, we had a business plan, and we didn't know what to do, and so we turned to our partners at the state. And I'll back up a little bit. In 2012, I will say that we were part of the statewide ports plan that looked at, with some more than gentle prodding from Senator Johnson. That was accomplished, and we appreciate that. And we, through the state, Business Oregon, the Infrastructure Authority, Ports Division, Brownsfield, all of those became key players in what we were doing. We got the planning money through Ports Division to look at the boatyard, and part of the boatyard was, it was a brownsfield. We needed to do some cleanup, and we accessed that brownsfield program. Karen Homelak, who's sitting back here, is to be commended, and we successfully cleaned that up, and we would not have taken the project on had it not been for that program. And they walked us all the way through it from beginning to end. But the planning that Business Oregon and Ports Division made available to us gave us the tools to acquire the boatyard and to expand the boatyard. We got a planning effort that when we did our new business plan in 2013, we focused on the boatyard, and we were able to use that plan to carry forward, and we were successful in getting a Connect Oregon grant, and we're expanding the boatyard as we speak. The piers are going in. We're going for a large mobile lift. It will be by far the largest mobile lift in the state. And what it means to is about 167 new family wage jobs. So it's a huge thing, and we appreciate the support of our partners at the state. And I'd be glad to answer any questions, but we couldn't have done it without the support of the state. That's it.
Questions? Bud, go home, tell your commission you knocked us dead.
Okay.
167 new jobs, and the biggest commercial dry dock between Seattle and San Francisco opened this fall. Great news.
Yeah, it really is. So thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone. All right. Mr. McCourt, Miss Amy. Yes, that one. And John Charles.
The committee's permission, if Amy would like to go first, that would be fine with me.
That's okay with you. Chairs Gomberg, Johnson, members of committee, thank you for giving me opportunity to speak today. For records, my name is Amy Soberian. I'm here in support of Bill, House Bill 5525, especially for the Oregon Brownfields Redevelopment Fund. The collective experiences that I have gained over the last 22 years as an environmental consulting engineer, over the past 10 years as a brownfield owner, and over the last 8 years as a small business owner, gave me a depth of knowledge on what it takes to revitalize brownfields properties, not just to remediate and rebuild, but to revitalize the business potentials once they have had. All of the sites are located in very good locations, basically, for businesses. Once they had been businesses that generate taxes, and they create jobs, and because of their challenges, that their environmental challenges that they faced, they lost those status. About 10 years ago, when I took over the small abandoned gas station in the heart of downtown Beaverton, that was an eyesore in the heart of the community, and I transformed it into a coffee house. It's called Ava Roasteria. Now, after 8 years, Ava Roasteria is a thriving small business. By the end of this year, we're going to have 5 locations. We're going to have, that actually translates to 80 jobs, some of them part-time, full-time, but it translates to 60 direct full-time jobs and God knows how many indirect. And it generates a significant amount of tax revenue for local, state, and federal government agencies. This is all started from a seed money, a revolving loan from Business Oregon that made it possible to manage environmental liability, actually go to the banks and ask for financing to redevelop and working capital to start a small business. This small brownfields revitalization project had a huge impact on the local economy. It has changed the city of Beaverton's vision. It was a catalyst to boost economic growth of adjacent properties, even during recession. Sadly, stories like Ava Roasteria's are rare in our state, and in part, it's probably due to lack of financing. But there's another thing with these properties, and the help that these properties can get from the funding like the one that Business Oregon has. Let's put financial aspects of brownfields revitalization on the side, which is a no-brainer. These properties have a lot of value. They can bring a lot of value to communities. Today, I'm testifying before you as a voice of a community. And I have a question for you as well. When I took over the 10,000 square foot small property in the heart of that community, the site was substantially contaminated, heavily contaminated, with carcinogens, gasoline-free products on the water table, and there were reports of vapor intrusion to neighboring properties that caused people to get sick, that actually caused DEQ to do an emergency response and come and clean up or contain. They couldn't clean it up, but contain it, because nobody had money ever for this kind of things. So they contain it. When I took over the property, we went through a prospective purchaser agreement with DEQ and the funds from the Business Oregon, so we could take care of the immediate immediate problem. So this site, with this kind of threat to human health and you know, the effects that they have in communities that we live in, those are, beside the financial disaster that they bring to communities, they also, there are health, imminent health problems, health threats to their communities. I know this bill is competing with others for funding. It was proposed for $50 million, slashed to $7 million. But my question to you, as a community member, as actually I'm a cancer survivor myself, is what could possibly be more important than protecting communities from such imminent threats? I think it's something to think about. With that, you know, if you have any question, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Thank you so much for being with us. And for posing an important question. I also wanted to say that that Representative Reed mentioned that he had to go to another meeting, and he's very sorry he missed your presentation. He wanted me to convey that to you.
Sure. No, he's been in our facility on a weekly basis doing a coffee connection with his
Well, he should stop people. That. It might stunt his growth. Excuse me. No, I'm sure you should keep coming. Absolutely. Mr. McCourt.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chairs Gomberg, Johnson, and members of the committee. My name is Doug McCourt. I'm a partner in the law firm Vader Wynn, based out of Portland, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Brownfields Coalition. I'm co-chair of the finance committee of that coalition, and in particular representing some of the small businesses, including law firms, consulting firms, and other entities that are participating in that coalition in support of Senate Bill 5525. I'm provided you both with Amy's and my testimony, so I'm not going to read it to you, but I am going to hit some highlights that I think need to be made. And before I begin, I just have to say, you know, you really have the rock stars of this movement here between Amy and Karen in the back. There's nothing really between them. They haven't experienced and they don't know. So I implore you to take their experience. My experience over the last three decades has taken me to every corner of the state and across the country working on these sites. And this fund, the Oregon Brownfields Redevelopment Fund that you have in Business Oregon, is one of the most effective tools we have, and there's really three reasons for that. One, it works, and I'll explain a couple reasons why it works. Two, it replaces something that doesn't exist, either in the private sector, from the federal government, or from local governments. And third, it's efficiently and it's fairly administered in rural communities and in urban areas. It works because it requires, these are just a couple of reasons, but really key, and they go to part of Amy's testimony. In order to get into the fund, roughly 80% of this fund is loans and 20% is grants. In order to get any of that money, you're required to collaborate with the Department of Environmental Quality. You're required to have something that makes sense, that actually deals with the environmental problem, but then makes sense from an economic perspective so that, you know, that 80% of that money has some chance of being paid back within the terms that they establish. But perhaps more importantly than that, the promise of all the revenues, all the tax revenues, the jobs are actually shown to have been created. I was part of what in 1995 the Oregon legislature called the Oregon Brownfields Funding Task Force, created by House Bill 3352. We came back 2 years later as required under that bill and proposed House Bill 3724, which created the programs that Karen now runs. We thought we had a pretty good idea, but we really didn't know how successful it was going to be or how well it was going to be used. Mal Foster was hired by our coalition to do a study of this, and the numbers are just, you know, plain as day. They determined that in the time period when the first appropriation came into that fund till today, for every dollar of state investment in brownfield cleanup, $116 has been leveraged, and they've generated 8,900 on-site and indirect jobs. I mean, that is really impressive. To the point about it meeting a need that isn't there, it doesn't duplicate private, federal, or local funding sources, and one of the key reasons here is that lenders loan to revenue, and they loan against assets, and most lenders at this early critical stage, the stage that Ava Rosteria was in, when, you know, there's a big problem there, and there's no track record of a business generating revenue. There's only an idea. Most people don't want to take a risk on that. Unfortunately, the way most of those projects get funded in the absence of something like this is off their balance sheet. And, of course, what that means is only the people that can afford it. Lastly, the fund is meeting needs, as you've seen in the testimony and the budget support from Business Oregon, from Baker City to Coos County, Astoria to Josephine County, and everywhere in between. And in the case of Ava Rosteria, again, loans from the fund were the glue that really enabled them to get over the environmental hurdle and then get the private sector lenders engaged, which not only created economic growth for them, but enabled them to get development capital and operating capital. So I'll close there. The recapitalization of the Oregon Brownfields Redevelopment Fund is the number one priority of our coalition, and there wasn't a single concern or question raised in that broad coalition about it. On behalf of the coalition, I urge your support for House Bill 5525, in particular the recapitalization of the Brownfield Fund. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. And Mr. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My name is John Charles, President of Cascade Policy Institute, and I'm not here to ask for any money. I have been watching the hearings for the last 3 days on my computer screen. I'd like to address a couple questions that have come up from committee members themselves. One is, are the, quote, signature research centers supposed to be self-supporting or in some sense evolve and get out of the nest and fly on their own? And in all the times I've testified on this over the last decade, that's been a topic of conversation. And there's been some talk, sometimes rather strong talk, that these centers are actually supposed to at some point evolve away. But if you look at how they actually behave as opposed to what the talk is, it's pretty clear they don't intend to do that. And I don't blame them, because the easiest way to get money is to show up right here. You almost always say yes. You almost always give them more. And you almost always create new ones. So when you go into work session, I suggest this might be a topic for an adult conversation, a serious conversation about what do you really want them to do? Because the signal they're getting is they like it just the way it is. This is where the money is. Second question is, what's the ROI on these various programs, especially on Oregon Inc., because they have a big budget, and the signature research centers. Now, the latest report that I've ever found is one I've quoted before. It's from January 31, 2011. It's on the website for what was OGA. And their investments from 1999 to 2010, and the total funds invested at that point were $64 million, and the stated rate of return was minus 8%. In addition, there was a legislatively mandated sub-account that had a return of negative 18% on about $9 million. Well, since then, I've always been eagerly awaiting the 2012 report, the 13, the 14. It's not there. It may be somewhere, but it's just not easy to find. And in the slides that have been presented, the hundreds of slides presented over the last couple of days, there are a couple claims. One is the agency's claim of a 7-to-1 ROI, as shown on a PowerPoint slide a couple of days ago, although I don't think it's a real measure of value. From what I can tell, it appears to simply take federal, private, and other funds, divide by the state amount of money put in by the state, and use the resulting number as the ROI. Well, using that logic, we could say that the $305 million of money that came in for Cover Oregon, when divided by the small amount of state money that went in, meant that that program had an awesome ROI, except that it never did anything, and we have federal investigators breathing down our necks to find out what happened to the money, and we never got anything from it, and the legislature recently euthanized the whole program. So I think you need a little more rigorous review of these programs to find out what you actually got. Now, on that point, the papers that were passed out to you, one looking at the Portland Seed Fund, which has $1.5 million of what was Oregon Growth Account money in it, and the other, a look at the one of your signature research funds, the Wave Energy Trust. I assigned one of our young associates last summer to do it, to just follow the money, just do a deep dive and find out where it all went. And the most memorable thing I have of that research over a two-month period is how many times he came to my office asking questions about how to get actual information, because it was not at all transparent. Constantly, emails not answered, phone calls not answered, people pretending not to know anything. So, I mean, one reason the papers are pretty short is because the information isn't that accessible. So, I think stepping back, you know, I think you need to ask yourself, basically, why do we keep adding programs? And I think there's two sort of competing visions of how you might address the question of economic development. In one scenario, we could simply adopt an investment-friendly tax structure. We could have a regulatory permitting system designed to get to yes in a reasonable period of time. We could have a state highway system that actually makes it easy to move people and freight. And we could give parents many options for educating their children outside of the government monopoly system. And in this scenario, people would actually want to stay in open business. Global investment capital would be parachuting into Oregon with our business-friendly tax structure. And the total state recruitment effort could possibly be limited to a website and a few dozen people answering phone calls with FAQs. In the second scenario, we could keep doing what we are doing. We could have a tax system that just about everybody hates. We could have the nation's most punitive land use regulatory control system, where the default answer to almost everything is no. I guess that's why we need a regional solutions team, or part of why. We could have a highway system where the last major expansion of a superhighway opened in 1982, and a feudal K-12 system that assigns students to brick buildings based on nothing more sophisticated than their street address. I think the path we've chosen here in the state, trying to pick winners and losers, and especially with the focus on emerging sectors and startup companies, is highly risky. It's not the best choice in my mind. I think it retards the normal market process and forces Oregon taxpayers to be silent partners in what is basically sort of a gambling scheme. You know, the state has tried to prop up a born-again streetcar industry in Portland. That hasn't worked too well. They're not even in the industry anymore. We've propped up ethanol manufacturers and solar energy companies, and we've had a few bankruptcies along the way there. We've tried to use tax credits to incentivize green energy and the wind industry, and the cost got so out of control you had to kill off a whole tax credit program. So I have a couple simple suggestions here. You should learn or relearn to say no. It's an acquired trait. It takes practice, and if you don't say no often enough, you forget how to say it. You should oppose quite a few of the POPs being proposed here. Don't allow any new signature research centers to be created. And I think you should roll up your sleeves and actually terminate a few. And I think you could start with the Oregon Wave Energy Trust, since we're decades away from any commercial success on that front. Drive Oregon, where I think billionaires like Elon Musk doesn't need our little help to get his business going. And the Drone Center of Excellence, I think you could start with small ones like that and work your way up maybe to the OGA or whatever it's called now, the Oregon Growth Fund or something, with a lot more money next time. But I think the path that we're on now of just rolling money out the door to all these different funds, and people show up and they have stories about how great these things are, and I understand why they're here. It is great to get the money. I think that's one path. It's not the only path. And I think you really need to have a conversation about fixing some of the fundamental problems, so we don't need a regional solutions team to help apply Band-Aids or tourniquets, as the case may be. So thank you.
Thank you for your perspective, Mr. Charles. We have these documents from Mr. Gray.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've got one panel left. I'm sorry. Yes. Question?
I wanted to direct this to Mr. McCourt. Going over your list here, about one-third of our counties on the brownfields are not represented, and they're almost all in eastern Oregon. And these counties are the ones that have the highest unemployment, the greatest poverty, and the least ability to get out of the situation that they're in. And yet I see Multnomah County with $10 million that went to them on 12 projects, it looks like. And I understand why some of these projects go where it's because you have a way of recovering part of the money, I assume. But I just want to make a comment that the most needy are not getting this money. Now, maybe they didn't apply for it. I don't know, but I know we have a Superfund site in Klamath County, and among many brownfields down in Klamath. And so I'm sure there are other counties that are the same way. And so it's kind of frustrating when I see that the fund is efficiently and fairly administered to rural and urban areas across Oregon. I don't see it that way, and I don't know the reasons why. I'm just making a comment from what I'm looking at here. About a third of the counties, all rural, are not getting anything.
Yeah, chairs and committee member, what's it? A couple of comments in response. First of all, I would refer you to staff because I know they have worked very hard to get out to every county in the state. And one of the reasons that you see the high concentration of money in the urban area is a historical reality that most of the industry that created our contamination, even though wood products industries, agricultural industries do have their problems, and those are spread across, you know, many of the rural counties you just listed, but most of the biggest problems were created in that Willamette River, in the major urban areas. And so that's why you see the high dollar amounts going there, and that's why you see so much concentration. If you actually compared the number of sites that are there to the ones that are getting funded, rural communities probably get more money on balance because they have many fewer sites, but some of them get funded. Now, I'm not trying to say, you know, there are other reasons why you don't see some of those counties that you listed on that list. And again, I'd refer you to staff, in particular Karen. But I do know this, is that, you know, I'm working with Baker City on a small project. I work in Coos County. I work in various parts of the state. And I do see one thing that I think may be a factor here, and that is that the capacity for folks to get their heads around applying for these funds when they're working three jobs and they're trying to volunteer, or they're elected officials, as you know, that aren't getting paid much. I mean, it's a struggle to just get access and get organized and get out there. Now, the things like the Regional Solutions Team, that they have been coordinating with the Brownfields effort miraculously ever since I've been working with it, and they're doing a really good job. Could we do better? Yeah, I'm sure we could, but I know that the resources are getting distributed, and I don't think there's any reason other than the fact that we just got to make sure that people everywhere in the state know about it. But because I'm sure that the intent is to get that money spread around.
Thank you, Representative Witt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Charles. John, do you have you developed a list subsidized projects through the state of Oregon that never seem to gain wings and are subsidized for unlimited periods of time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, I don't think I have an exhaustive list. Mm-hmm.
You named quite a few, I know. But.
Well, it would be a pretty long list, and in some cases, for me as a member of the public, the information is extremely hard to get. You know, your committee or some government arm might have access to more information, but the short answer is no. I just have a lot of anecdotal information, and
may I follow up?
I'd be interested in chatting with you about such a list, and I'd be interested in knowing when the initial subsidy began, how long that was intended to last for initially. And I can deduce the rest of it myself, probably. So, thank you.
I'd be happy to help, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Charles, I think you'd be pleased to know that on the record yesterday, a request was made for the pro forma for the Oregon Growth account. And professional staff is in the process of getting it. It will be a public document, and I hope you avail yourself of it.
I will.
I share your concern about the negative returns.
Thank you.
Representative Witt, you have another.
Yes, please. I can't help myself here, Mr. Chairman. But the growth fund today, John, EcoTrust tomorrow.
Oh, the Energy Trust,
me. Excuse me, the Energy Trust. Thank you.
All right. I wanted to thank this panel. I'm going to bring up our last group. I thank you all for your patience. Amos, Flick, and Lynch.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomberg, Chair Johnson. Two things have humbled me today. The fact that my writing is so atrocious, Chris Fick came off as Amos Fick, and the fact that Goonies is now 30 years old, I'm a little bit more depressed leaving this room. But thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. I'm Chris Fick. I'm with Multnomah County. I'm testifying this afternoon on behalf of the Oregon Brownfields Coalition. Doug McCourt did a good job of just describing the benefits that this coalition sees, but I want to just tell you a little bit more about how this coalition came together. The coalition, as you've seen in the testimony that's been submitted, is a wide-ranging group from local governments, statewide government associations and statewide business associations, environmental groups, and business organizations. And it arose after prior efforts failed to get funding from the state legislature to refund the Brownfields Redevelopment Fund. As Mr. McCourt said, while we're looking at various policies in other committees and in other pieces of legislation to deal with the significant issue of brownfields contamination throughout the state, recapitalization of the Brownfields Redevelopment Fund was our number one priority. There are over 13,000 brownfield sites throughout the state, dozens in every county, hundreds in many counties, and many in every single legislative district. And these brownfields are obviously a current blight, but also present an opportunity for economic revitalization and economic development. They have numerous benefits. They're almost always within the UGB. They're often serviced by current infrastructure, be it water, other utility, wastewater, and transportation. And there are blights that could be removed from the landscape. So it is the primary objective of this organization, this coalition, to see the governor's recommended budget and the co-chair's budget include lottery back bond funds for the Brownfields Redevelopment Fund. In Multnomah County, the situation is rather dire. We're home to about 2,300 brownfield sites. The city of Portland's done an analysis saying that they need about 700 sites of industrial land. We have about 900 brownfield sites. 558 of those are already industrial. So the future industrial growth for the city of Portland and Multnomah County is going to come from those current brownfield sites. And that's why we need to make sure that they get cleaned up and provide opportunities for job growth. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fick. Mr. Amos.
Chairs Gomberg and Johnson, members of the committee. My name is Bill Amos from Portland, and I run a small business called Northwest Alpine Gear. We make technical outdoor apparel with a focus on alpine and winter climbing. A big part of our mission is to support local manufacturing, and as such, all of our products are made in Oregon. When Business Oregon asked me to testify today, I was thrilled to have the opportunity to show my gratitude for an organization that's been very supportive of my business and has helped us grow over the last few years. With the support of Business Oregon and export promotion grants through them, we were able to travel to the ISPO trade show in Munich in 2012, the outdoor trade show in Friedrichshafen, Germany in 2014. Exhibiting at these shows resulted in distribution deals in Germany, the UK, and South Korea. As a result of our growing international and domestic sales, we formed another company last October, Kachatna Apparel Manufacturing, which does all the cut and sew manufacturing for Northwest Alpine, as well as contract sewing for a number of other brands. We currently have 6 full-time employees at our facility in Newburg, and due to the high demand we're experiencing for domestic sewing, that number is almost sure to increase over the next 6 months. Business Oregon also helped us identify on-the-job training grants for manufacturing, which were available to us and have been instrumental in helping us get things off the ground. Northwest Alpine and KM support 7 full-time jobs in Oregon, as well as income for numerous freelance designers and design studios we work with locally. I wanted to personally thank Carolyn Meese, Dana Shannon, and Mitchell G. from Business Oregon. They've been a pleasure to work with, and without their and Business Oregon's help, we wouldn't be in the position we're in today. Thanks.
Thank you so very much. Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much. A question about your business. I have been told that when we started offshoring many of the industrial sewing applications about 30 years ago, that the pipeline of industrial sewers, or people skilled in the industrial art of sewing, practically disappeared. Are you having trouble finding people that are skilled in all of the allied arts, pattern reading, actually manipulating industrial sewing machines? How are you doing with a workforce?
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest challenges that we're facing now. Once all the manufacturing moved overseas, a lot of those other kind of periphery pattern making and design jobs, all that left as well. So now we're kind of in a position where people at the large apparel companies, designers at the large apparel companies, are kind of used to just designing a tech pack that has all specifications for a garment, sending it overseas, and then getting a sample back. And there's a lot that goes on in between that. So there's a lot of kind of institutional knowledge that's been lost, and it is a major problem right now. There is some efforts to help with the workforce training, and I'm hoping that more of that can happen, because it is there's a huge demand right now for contract sewing, and there's not a lot of capacity. So
would you just say that again one more time for emphasis? I want to make sure Director Robbins hears you. Not a lot of capacity.
No.
I'd like to call your attention to a company in Scappoose, Oregon Aero, that's actually mm-hmm. developing a curriculum and will try to bring more industrial sewers into the pipeline. They're developing it right now privately, but I would call that to your attention.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the program and excited about the potential there.
Good. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Thank you. We're so pleased to hear your business is in an ascension mode.
Thank you.
Ms. Lynch, last but not least, thank you for waiting.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. First of all, we would like to acknowledge Director Robbins' work on behalf of Oregon and in Business Oregon, the outreach that he has done around the state. Our league members have appreciated going to the various meetings that he has participated in to share the vision of Oregon and the vision of making sure that Oregon businesses happen. We have listened the last few days to the variety of programs that Business Oregon provides. We would ask that you consider how you might help him offer the opportunity of flexibility to be able to manage these myriad of small programs in some way, best way for best business practices as you add these new ideas about funding for various programs. The League has supported Community Solutions and the structures that followed, GIRT, ERT, and now Regional Solutions. Please understand that. We support the concept of regional solutions. We support agencies working together on issues of mutual concern, and we have continued to do so in various other formats. Our concern with regional solutions began as we saw staff of Natural Resource Agency being asked to participate in yet another set of meetings, the RACs, with more responsibilities, while the agencies themselves suffered cuts related to their original mission. So we raised these concerns, and we supported additional agency staff so to assure that both missions could be addressed. So we understood the issue. With the advent of the Regional Solutions Advisory Committees, we raised concerns about the public's opportunity to participate in decisions that affect state dollars and state staffing. We have, I'm going to cut, you obviously have my letter. Projects under the Regional Solutions Program have often have environmental impacts, but there is no representative, and you heard Commissioner Labhart mention that amongst his projects, one of them was going to involve some environmentally sensitive issues about which he thought he was definitely going to need environmental participation. So there's no representative addressing these concerns on the Regional Solutions committees. advisory committees. Agency staff who are charged with processing the permits for these projects are influenced by the economic values that affect their fair processing of these permits. Many of the staff in the regional areas write the permits for those regional things. So we believe it's important to have a broad voice at the table. We have worked with the regional solutions staff to improve meeting notices, web presence, and have had league members attend meetings to monitor activities. We've advertised the program, the RAC priority setting process, and meetings. Yet we still have concerns about state financing of programs or projects that are not widely known. And our efforts and the state's to increase public awareness are still less than adequate. As we fight for every dollar received for operating Natural Resource Agency programs, we see the possibility of $22 million being allocated to the RACs to spend at their discretion. At least in 2014, there was a specific list of projects viewable to legislators during the budget process. One of those projects, the Workforce Housing Loan Program, you have heard and have seen, was announced by the governor recently. We see as a pilot to be replicated in other parts of the state, so we are not against the funding of some of these projects. That is not the issue. But the $22 million represents at least 6% of the dollars that natural resource agencies get. And remember, they do the permitting for many of these projects. It is now a requirement that other grants and funding opportunities of natural resource agencies take into consideration those regional priorities. That makes them even more important when it comes to spending state resources. I was appreciative when Senator Johnson asked about the myriad of regional staff people, and I appreciated the document that you now have on yesterday's OLIS related to the different groups of people that are supporting of regional solutions. That is an issue, plus the staff of other core agencies. Additionally, the governor's 2015 budget includes alignment coordinators housed directly in the governor's office and in four different natural resource agency budgets, plus you have three in this budget. We just would like to see some consolidation, and you as Ways and Means people have the opportunity to look at the entire picture and not just some subset of each of these programs. A program meant to increase efficiency is growing into a bureaucratic elephant with staffing that might be better allocated to those agencies who actually process permits. The League simply asks this subcommittee to review the program and consider the consequences of growing staff requirements and the monies being allocated. This request does not ask for dissolution of the Regional Solutions Program. We just believe that it's a good idea for the legislature to take responsibility for the funding that is in the $22 million, for instance. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your attention.
Thank you so much. Senator Johnson.
I just can't let your statement stand without challenge. The natural resource agencies are at the table in regional solutions,
yes.
And they are at the table to assure coordinated permitting from the ground forward. So your assertion that there are no natural resource people at the table is patently false.
I'm sorry, co-chairs. I did not say that, and if I did, I misspoke. They are at the table, and that's why we asked for more staff for those agencies, because they were asked to be at the table on top of doing their regular jobs without additional staffing from the natural resource agencies. Those budgets were being cut at the same time those people were being asked, those field staff were being asked to attend additional meetings.
Mr. Chair,
please, sir.
As are the field staff for OBDD, as are the field staff. I mean, one of the reasons that it works is that there is issue expertise at the table.
Absolutely.
So it's not unique to the natural resource.
No, but it is. But the natural resource budgets are much smaller, and that's the reason for it.
Lots of budgets are much smaller.
Thank you. Any other questions?
there anybody else that wanted to speak today that didn't get a chance to sign up? If not, I want to say thank you so much, colleagues, for staying with us. I know we have run half an hour long. We've had some excellent feedback today. I want to thank the staff, and I certainly want to thank all of you that were with us through the afternoon for your important feedback. Mr. Robbins, did you have anything? I didn't think so. I'm going to go ahead and close the hearing on 5525, and if there's nothing else, I will adjourn this overlong hearing. Thank you. Adjourn this overlong hearing. Thank you.